just to let you know up front, both of my friends tell me I have a face made for radio.
Good, yes. Good. All right, now you can have a seat.
All right.
A face made for radio? Is that what you said?
What's that?
I think this is one on the radio.
That's yeah, a good so, all set?
We're all set, so I just wanted to, can I give people a little primer on the microphone?
Sure.
Okay, great. So you want to keep the microphones relatively close, and to the extent that you can remember, Rich wants you to have a conversation, so we want you to feel natural, but also if you can, for example, you know, if you were talking to somebody who's way down the table and you lean away from your microphone, it's going to be tough for us to pick up the conversation, so try to stay on the mic as much as you can without being too self-conscious about it. And it's okay if it's a fist away from you in terms of your distance. So, yes, yeah, so pull it forward. If, like Timothy, you might want to pull it a little closer. It feels good. And they've got these little fancy sort of flexi straws so that you can make it comfortable. And we'll let you know. We'll let Rich know if you need to get on the microphone a little bit, okay?
All right. Thanks all for coming. My name is Rich Harwood, and I live in Bethesda, Maryland. And I'm here in Vegas today and tomorrow, and then I'm going off to California tomorrow afternoon for a couple of days, and then to Boston. I head up an organization in Maryland that's a national nonprofit. We're nonpartisan, and we're interested in – one of the things we're interested in is sort of how people think things are going in the country. So tonight, we're going to have a conversation. It's going to be like a kitchen table conversation. There are no right answers to the questions I'm going to ask you. Okay? And the reason why we're doing this as opposed to, have you ever been called for one of those surveys? Someone calls you at 6 o'clock at night, you're making dinner or something, and you wonder, my God. Yeah. You know, where did they get these questions from? And then, you know, they ask you the question, then they want you to pick A, B, and C, and you're sitting there saying the question's not really relevant, and I don't like any of the answers. Can I give you another answer? And they say, no, you got to pick one of the ones we gave you, right? So the reason why we're doing this is because I'm pretty much interested.
One more thing.
Yeah.
We want you to put the mics at nose height. I'm going to back yours up just a little bit.
Okay. All right.
That way, you can breathe comfortably, breathe normally, and it doesn't sound like.
All right. Darth Vader. Darth Vader.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Back to the surveys here. So the reason why we're doing these conversations is because I don't have any preset answers for you, and I'm going to keep asking different questions to find out what you're really. I'm really interested in what you're thinking and why you're thinking it and how you came to the conclusion you did. So that we can really understand what people are thinking about. And as I said, we're doing this conversation. We've done one in Sonoma, California, one in Bend, Oregon, one in Detroit, one in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois. We've done one in Jacksonville, one in Dallas, one in New York City. So we're basically covering the country. Our institute, this group I head up, is going to produce a report sometime next year. That we'd love to send you on these conversations. Your names won't be in it, but your comments might. So we might say a woman from Las Vegas or a man from Las Vegas said. And so what I'd love to do at the end of this conversation is if you're interested in us sending you a copy, it's free, we'd love to send it to you just so you can see what happens. Okay. All right. So let me just give you a couple ground rules for the conversation, then we're just going to jump in. As I said, there are no right or wrong answers, so don't worry about it. We don't all have to disagree. We don't all have to agree. In fact, if you disagree with something someone says, I hope you tell us. The only rule there is sort of the golden rule, which is treat someone when you disagree with them like you want to be treated if they disagree with you, mm-hmm. right? I've been doing these conversations for 25 years. I've never really had to enforce that, but I need to say it. What I will ask you to do is pretty much talk one at a time so we can hear each other, which is the most important thing. There will be times in this conversation where some of you are more quiet than others. And so I may say, hey, Marie, what are you thinking?
Nothing.
And Marie, right on cue, gave me the answer. So if you're thinking nothing, just say that. You can just say pass. But my experience in doing these for 20, 25 years is the folks who are sitting quiet often have a lot of good things to say. When I'm not leading these conversations, I'm usually more the quiet one. So I love it when someone calls me because I may have something to say then. There are some of you who may talk more than others. It happens in every group. And what you need to know is we want to hear what you have to say, but there may be times when I want to pull someone else in. So I might say, Emmanuel?
Manny.
Manny? I might say, Manny, hey, can you hang on for a minute? I just want to pull in someone else. Nothing personal. Can't be personal. We just met, right? But nothing personal. But I just want to make sure everyone gets a chance to talk. If I'm hearing you say the same thing you just said 2 minutes ago, I might say, hey, I got you. Let me pull someone else in, okay? Inevitably, that happens. It just goes with the territory. There will be times when you say something, and I'm going to play devil's advocate. I'm going to say, how could you say that? Is it Ken or Kenneth?
Ken.
Ken. So I might say, hey, Ken, how can you say that? And I may just push on you a little just to sort of see how you respond and what's going on, what you're thinking about. But again, it's really just my goal is to learn as much as I possibly can about what you're thinking about. So that's why I'll do that. All right. Any other questions?
One last ground rule from me.
There is another question. Here he is. This is our secret guest.
Yeah. Once you get the microphone in a comfortable place, go ahead and refrain from touching it, because that will also, if you can sort of imagine someone sticking their finger in your head and through your ear and right. tickling your brain, that's what it sounds all like right. to us in there. And it'll essentially eliminate any possibility to hear what you're doing. So get it settled the way that makes you comfortable.
Okay. All right. And then once we get going, what I want you to do, what inevitably I've done these for television, I've done these for radio, just forget about the microphones. Once we get going, just put them where they need to be, and let's just have a conversation. All right. So think of this as we all met at someone's house or in a backyard, and we're going to have a conversation about what's going on in the country. And as I said, there are no right or wrong answers. So it's just what you think and why. All right. You ready to get going? So we're going to be on a first-name basis, if that's okay. Again, my name's Rich. And what I'd like to do is just go around the room and quickly introduce yourself, first name only, where you live, how long you've lived there, and what you like to do in your free time. Okay? Want to get us started?
My name is Delisa. You can call me Dee.
Okay.
I live in North Las Vegas, like around Aliante. I've lived there for 4 years now, and I like to shop.
Shop. All right. Great. Thanks.
My name is Michael. I've been in Las Vegas since 97. I live over 215 in Eastern area. And on my time off, I like to spend with family.
Family doing...
anything from going to Lake Mead, Mount Charleston, Red Rock, movies, whatever.
Okay.
Whatever
great.
We want to do.
All right. Sounds good.
Hi. My name's Angela.
Angela?
Angela. Mm-hmm. Angie.
Angie. All right.
I live in North Las Vegas also. I lived in Las Vegas about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to browse on the internet and watch movies.
All right. Another movie person. All right. Yeah. I'm sorry we're not going to be showing you movies tonight. All right. You're up.
Hi, I'm Rita.
Hey, Rita.
I live in southeast Las Vegas. I've been in Vegas just about 20 years. In my spare time, I work out a lot, and I like to go to plays.
Work out doing what?
Well, yoga, the treadmill.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks for coming.
I'm Sue, and in my spare time, I like to either scrapbook family pictures or read or knit.
Great. And how long have you been in Vegas?
About 14 years.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
My name is Joe. I've been in Vegas since 1981. What's that, 30 years? In my spare time, I enjoy church activities. I play tennis. And that's really about it. Some other sports.
Okay, good. Thanks for coming.
My name's Maria. Live in Southeast also.
I can't hear you.
Maria. I live in Southeast. Mm-hmm. Born here, born and raised.
Great.
And spending time with my kids and family.
Great. Like can I ask how old are your kids?
I have a stepson, 17, a 10-year-old, a 5, and a 4.
Great. Thanks.
I'm Kristen. I live in Southwest, very, very Southwest, like almost Blue Diamond, kind of. In my spare time, I design post-apocalyptic cyberware. And wow. I also work at the Orleans. And I usually just, like, hang out with the kids and stuff as well.
Great. Thanks.
My name is David. I moved here just a little over 3 years ago. I live in Henderson. And I like to tinker a lot with my electronics.
All right. Great. Thanks.
I'm Tim. I've lived here for probably just about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
10 years next month. Spare time, like to work on computers, play with computers, electronics.
Great. All right.
Hi, Manny. I live in Northwest Vegas. Basically, been here about 6 years, and spare time, I either do home theater or we go to a lot of shows as well, or we go play.
All right. Thanks for coming.
My name is Angie. I live in Las Vegas. I've been here 10 years, and in my free time, I like to jet ski at the lake, and I like to play golf.
All right. So we got sports, movies, shows, and
welcome to Vegas.
Welcome to Vegas. All right. All right.
My name is Ken. I've lived in Henderson for a little over a year now. I'm a big movie buff. I love watching movies. I love acting. I work out a lot, play sports, you know, all sorts of different things. Stay active.
All right. Sounds good. All right. If you have a cell phone or anything, please turn it off. If you can for the next couple hours, a few hours.
Like, no, it has my issues.
By the way, he's back.
It's not just silent, not turning on silent. You have to actually turn it off because the satellite is talking to us through your. You hear it.
Okay.
I'll see you when it off.
Turn it off. I know it's a tough thing to do.
It is. More than happy to.
Hey, look, this goes all the way into outer space, guys.
I don't know.
Work will not like
glad I'm with me.
Okay. You all got something to drink, something to eat before?
Yes.
So we got started about 20 minutes late, right? Mm-hmm. So let's sort of see how it goes. We might take a break, or we might just run through, depending on where we go. It's about 6 o'clock now. You all set, Dean?
Yeah.
All right. Great.
Technology. I'm telling you.
All right, so here we go. How would you say things in the country are going right now?
Eh.
Yeah?
Eh.
Meaning what?
It's okay. It could be better, but it's like right in the middle. We're not doomed yet, but we're almost there.
Not doomed yet, but almost there? How about some others? How are we doing? How's the country doing?
Bad.
Bad?
Real bad.
Why?
How many thousands of people in Las Vegas are out of work? How many of us are losing homes, filed bankruptcy, wiped out 401k plans, took pay cuts, companies folding left and right? Our economy is in the dirt. Our bond rating for the country was AAA. We're now down to AA. We could default. The United States could default on loans at any point in time. Watch the news. The borders are overrun. We've got border towns where our police officers that are supposed to protect us are being killed. In my line of work, fire stations are being shut down. Ambulances are being shut down. Police officers are being laid off. Washington, D.C. is disconnected from the country.
Okay. Let me pull some others in and let's come back to some of those. How about some others? How would you say things are going in the country right now?
Not well.
Meaning?
Just not well. I could expound on what Michael was talking about over there.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, I know the cause of it or one of the major causes of it. Mm-hmm. That I tried to fix about 20 years ago and was basically things happened to me, like my life was threatened and I got laughed and scoffed at. So,
okay. How about some others? I just want to get some stuff on the table and then we'll come back to some of these ideas. How's it going?
I think the country's in a bad way as well. The economy's bad. Jobs. I mean, even our healthcare system is horrible.
What do you mean, our healthcare system?
Even our healthcare system, people don't have healthcare. Elderly, disabled. I mean,
and if you're not working, you don't get
veterans. It. Even I mean, it's even the veterans that fight our wars don't have correct healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Maria,
even if you're let's say people that are getting laid off, if they're not working, they're not going to have insurance either. So you have to think about that too. And then if they have to go to a hospital emergency, who's going to pay the bill right there? Mm-hmm. And there's no job security either. Whatever you do, like firefighters, they don't have their job security. Police officers don't have job security either.
Teachers don't have their job security.
Yeah.
I'm a teacher, CCSD teacher, and we had, you know, with the budget cutbacks and stuff, you get pushed out of your position, and now I have to go do something else, and I still have the student loans and everything else. And we had the classroom, actually me and my mother worked at the same school, and it was between me and her. So who do you tell your mama to go or you go? So it was just with the budget cuts. And now she's sitting in a classroom by herself with 40 students. And we're supposed to learn. We're supposed to do this and that. And it's mostly like classroom management. And it's all just due to the budget cuts.
So let me make sure I got this straight. The choice between the jobs was between your mom's and yours?
Well, when it came down to our school, when we had to lay off. We had to get rid of some teachers because of the whole budget thing. Like anybody that was on their first and second year were like pretty much automatically escorted out the door. It didn't matter how qualified you were. It didn't matter if all your children passed the test. Someone who has been in there forever and everybody's failing gets their job over yours. It didn't matter. But it was just like all with the budget cuts. And it was like she could leave or it was like either which way.
Mm-hmm. How about some others? Ken, how do you see things going?
I have to agree with every one of them. I mean, it's getting bad right now. I can't tell you how many people come through, you know, my job and always complain about, you know, they don't have enough money for this, you know, they've lost their job, they're struggling, and not because of that, you know, there's actually even more crime because of that, because, you know, they're starting to become desperate and needy, you know, people are starting to steal more, starting to become over-aggressive with things, stressed out. So.
I work at the library, and we are seeing a big increase in homeless people wanting to just come and kind of live at the library because it's so hot and they have nowhere to go. And they come up and tell us they're hungry, and, you know, it's really, really sad.
Do you think that what we're experiencing now is different from before?
I think it's increased.
From what?
From other points in your life?
I've
never seen it like this before.
I'm sorry, Dave, I can't speak up anymore.
I've never seen it like this before. Yeah. So I'm 45. In my 45 years, I've never seen it to this degree.
And what's different for you? What's different that you see?
The magnitude. We've had recessions before. I remember my stepfather was a carpenter, and this was in the late 90s, and pretty much everything in California shut down. But that lasted like maybe 4 years, you know, kind of. But then it was just immediate another boom. To this degree, I'm an iron worker by trade, and I've talked to guys out here that have been out here 35 years, and nobody has ever seen the work this shut down since they've been out here. So I think it's more of the magnitude of it.
Right, we step outside our door in North Las Vegas. It's a big sign talking about, you're not safe. Oh, we don't have police. The police are gone. Like big signs. You're walking down the street. It is like, oh, more crime now.
So, what are your chief concerns now? What do you, when you look out across sort of what's happening? What
surviving?
Yeah,
surviving.
Yeah, trying to make it.
Just surviving.
What do you
mean? I'm 65 years old, and I would never thought I'd say the day that I was glad I didn't have grandchildren. I'm glad I don't have grandchildren. Because I hate to see what we're going to have in this country in another 10, 20 years.
Yeah. Tim, what do you think?
I really fear for my grandchildren.
Sue, I'm sorry.
I really fear for my grandchildren. That's what I was going to say right before she said what she said.
What do you fear?
Their future. It looks very hopeless. It looks very dim. My grandchildren are very bright, but I just don't know if that's going to be enough.
When you say dim, what do you mean?
Opportunities for jobs. The fact that the debt in the country is going to just crush them.
Tim, what do you think when you look out across the horizon? What are your chief concerns?
Definitely work. My daughter just had a baby, so I am a grandfather. Mm-hmm. Awful young, but thank you. I see the future for her is very dark. And the future for my daughter, I mean, they live in Michigan. Michigan's been hit hard for the last 20 years on jobs. I mean, it didn't earn a state nickname of Welfare Wonderland for nothing, you know. And now I'm seeing that throughout the country. I left Michigan to make money, to be able to give something to my daughter when it's time for me to go. But I don't see that now. Everything I have made in the past, I have to spend now to survive. And I've been the type of a jack of all trades. I've never went without a job until my company folded 2 years ago and I had nothing. Nobody was hiring. So I had to start my own company. And I've already cut down on some of the stuff I used to offer because it's no longer being requested.
Angie, when you look out, what's your chief concern looking forward?
I think jobs are a big issue. I mean, as people are laid off, and then, you know, that's just a trickle-down effect. They're laid off, their homes go into foreclosure, and it seems very cyclical. And so when I look in the future, I just wonder how it's going to stop, how the cycle is going to stop. I don't have the answer, but I wonder.
Do you think that, are you optimistic that this will sort of change directions at some point, or do you see this happening for the foreseeable future?
I'm the eternal optimistic. You know, I'm always optimist. I think that we as Americans will survive this recession. I think that jobs will come back. Maybe not like they were in the 90s, the construction jobs here in Las Vegas. And we had a boom. I mean, iron workers and, you know, welders and, you know, all the carpenters were making money hand over fist with all the, you know, houses being built, and then the housing boom and then the housing crash. So pretty much if you're a construction worker here in Nevada, you're on unemployment or welfare, and you're used to making, you know, a lot of money, and the construction business is out. It's no more in Las Vegas.
So Michael, a few minutes ago, raised politics. I'm curious, how do you feel about politics today?
How do I feel about politics any day?
Tim?
I figure that every politician right now does not have a clue what the nation really needs. They're all grabbing for straws. Democrats, Republicans, liberals, it doesn't matter. They're just out of touch. They're professional politicians. And all they're worried about is where their next little bit of money is going to come in from. Mm-hmm.
Kristen,
and that's all we see.
Mm-hmm. Kristen, what do you think?
Personally, I don't really pay attention to, like, the political part. You know, if something major comes up, like, say they're going to change, you know, the schools or the health care or something like that, it usually is brought to the attention right away. Like, oh yeah, we're going to, D said, the staff being, you know, laid off and things like that based on, what was it, seniority rather than experience. You know, it's just like things like that, you know, need to be brought to attention. You know, I feel personally that it shouldn't be seniority. It should be, you know, qualifications versus that and et cetera. One of my parents was a social worker for the Nevada Welfare Office, and she had maybe like 15 some odd years experience, you know, focusing on those type of people and things like that. And she was dismissed, like the teachers or whatever, just, you know, based on non-seniority or things like that. So basically, like, getting back to what you're talking about.
Yeah, so like, how do you feel about politics right now?
They're, like, confusing to me, honestly. It's like, you know, one person will say one thing, another person will say another one slightly different. But it'll be the same thing, and it's, like, pretty much going, like, nowhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How about some others? What, how do you see politics going? How do you feel about politics today?
I think the politicians need to put their heads together. You know, don't be one-sided, Republican, Democrat. Let's put our minds together. You know, we got a lot of good politicians. There's a lot of corrupt politicians, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good politicians out there as well. And if they put their minds together, maybe we can, you know, start building our roads, start, you know, finish efficient energy projects, stuff like that, where we can put our minds together instead of fighting with each other of how big a debt the debt is. Let's start reducing the debt. You know, let's start mm-hmm. making American products.
Okay. Sue, what do you think? How do you feel about politics today?
Hopeless.
Hopeless?
Yeah, because I think it's just gotten to a point where I don't know if we can turn it around.
Meaning what?
Just I think that the integrity and honesty is totally gone. There's a lot of things that they do behind our back, and by the time we find out, it's too late. I get a lot of emails, you know, warning me this is going to be voted on, and you know, sign this petition and so forth. And it's very scary.
How do those petitions and emails make you feel?
They make me feel like I'm responsible to do something, but I feel like I'm so small. There's not really anything I can do that has any real effect. So it makes me not sleep. That's how it makes me feel.
But I think that's been over the years. They have kind of trained us all that, oh, well, let the politicians take care of it. And I think if we don't, as a society, start taking care of our own business and stepping up and going, you know, you guys work for us. We don't work for you. And quit talking down to us because we're not stupid, and they tend to talk down to us, that's the only way we're going to pull out of this. And I think as a, you know, as a society, we've got to stop and say, enough. We don't care if you're Republican. We don't care if you're Democrat. We don't care what yours are. Start thinking about us and what's good for the country.
Mm-hmm. David, what do you make of this? What do you think about politics today?
I just feel that each party is not allowing the other one to be victorious right now. And I think there's a lot of fear based on if Obama's administration was to all of a sudden pull through and everything was to be wonderful, then everybody would look towards Republicans in the future and say, we're not going to be voting for you. So right now they're the party of the no, and so just based on that. And so, yeah, until there's at least one party that's fully the majority where they can just pass everything, we're not going to be able to get anything done when it's all broken up and they're just fighting against each other.
Angie, what do you make of this? What do you think about politics today?
I mean, I don't know that politics today is a lot different than politics at any other day. I mean, I think it's essentially a business, and I don't know that anybody's ever going to fully agree with one side, so everyone's always going to have issues with politicians. Politics as a rule, it's a little boring to me. I don't get too in-depth into following it. I know the basics. I vote. But other than that, like Christian was saying, unless it's a major issue, I don't pay that much attention to it.
Does it affect you?
I'm sure it does affect me, but I don't pay that much attention to it.
Because
like Sue said, I don't know that just – it feels like just me alone, it doesn't make a difference. And I know when, you know, that's million-fold, everyone else thinks that it does make a difference, but that's my position.
Mm-hmm. Ken, you're shaking your head. What are you thinking?
I agree with her. Actually, I don't know that much about politics myself. I mean, I'm only 21 years old, and I'm, like, I'm listening to everyone here, and I'm like – it's like all groundbreaking.
Really knows.
And it's like all, you know, new information that I'm learning. So it's more learning experience for me. And I'm just making it myself, doing what I have to do to make it through what now, let alone what's going on with politicians, politics, and how our own leaders and whatnot.
I know. Honestly, like, what's it called? The Tea Party people?
Mm-hmm.
I guess they're like fans of, you know, this whole politics thing, so they would probably know more about it than, mm-hmm. you know, the people who aren't involved with that. So it's like confusing and, you know, just like a loss of like pretty much everything. It's like, who's that guy? What's he doing?
So it just sounds like a bunch of noise to you?
Pretty much. It's like the basic, you know, ever, what do you call it? Like national stuff that I get is from The Daily Show and like, you know, Colbert Report and stuff like that. It's like, oh, yeah, that guy.
Okay. What do you think? How do you feel about politics today?
How I feel about politics today. Honestly, I just think that this whole nation is just, we don't represent what we preach. I swear, 9/11, everybody was all kumbaya and everything else, but it is nowhere near united. United we do not stand. Their only thing it is just a big old argument. Okay, well, I'm gonna disagree with you on that. Just like, and it's like, for what? Like, let's come to an agreement. Oh, he said this part that I didn't like, so I'm gonna change it, and then we can argue about this for a whole nother week and so on and so on. But the one thing that I know, like for me personally, it affects me, but I won't let it have me. I'm a person. I'm not going to live in fear or anything else. I'm strictly Bible, biblical. I'm like the God is for me type person. And if they're going to do all that little stuff, I know I'm going to be okay in the end. But all of that, until they're united and come together, it's not going to be anything but chaos. You can't have any order in chaotic and people disagreeing and all of that. And if it's going to just continue to be that, they're right. It's going to get worse. You can't get better with chaos.
Manny, what do you make of this? How do you think politics is going?
Well, actually, I do believe we do have one hope, and that's Ron Paul.
Yay.
Because
right, but we're gonna keep the presidential candidates off the table tonight, right? Okay, no politicking here.
Okay, I don't mean it that way. Yeah. I just mean that, you know, because he is the one who is connected. You know, most of the politicians in Washington are very disconnected, and even at the state houses, they're even disconnected.
What do you mean
from
disconnected?
They don't, most of them, first of all, they have all the money they need, regardless. They don't think about the poor little guy out there who, you know, is struggling to pay his rent, who is struggling to eat. There's 29,000 people in the world die every day from starvation, you know, and that every day. And 26,000 of those are children. So, you know, and this is where we are.
And when Manny says this, do you think that, do politicians care about those kids? Do they not care about those kids? What's your?
They don't care.
Michael, what?
Our politicians are so disconnected from the American public, from everyday people. We all live in different parts of Las Vegas, and we can take you into our neighborhoods, where it's just home after home after home of foreclosures. Mm-hmm. Do you think the politicians care if I lose my house? No.
You don't think they care?
No. No, they don't care.
Tim, you don't think they care?
Oh, no.
What do you mean? No. What do you mean they don't care? You mean they literally don't care if you lose your home?
Oh, they care if they lose the numbers for their district. You know, we got to keep our numbers for our district, so we'll pump some money into the district right now. Let's throw a little chicken feed out there and feed you a little bit.
Some help.
A little bit. And then, you know.
But even like the people, I've had neighbors that they've went foreclosure. They've gone to the banks and they won't accept them because they have certain rules where they won't help them modify their homes. And they keep fighting. I mean, I would think if they helped them in some way, it would help the economy too. People not losing their home, at least they could maintain it. But they don't even try that.
Yeah, and it's the politicians who create those rules. Mm-hmm. Not us, not the American people. It's the politicians who say it's this way or else.
All right, so we've been talking a little bit about sort of what's going on in the country, what some of your concerns are, how politics is going. Quick question for you. If you had to pick one word or one phrase to describe sort of where the country is right now, what word or phrase would you use?
Roller coaster of magic. We're just along for the ride.
Okay. How about some others?
Crapper.
Crapper? All right.
Depression.
Dismal.
Dismal? Sue?
I can't even express that. I can't think of a word that...
What's the feeling?
depression, both in the economy and in the people.
Angie, what would you say?
Shaky.
Ken?
Undivided. That's what I would say.
All right. Angie?
Unknown.
Unknown?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, I think it's a little unknown in the sense that, I mean, everybody has ideas on what the politicians should do and how they should make it better. But it's unknown what they will do and how they can make it better.
Hmm. Okay. Joe, did you?
Optimistic.
You're back to optimism. All right. Maria?
I say broken right now.
Broken. What's broken?
Like the whole thing, everything's like, right now it's not, you know how something has to be together and it's broken. No one part. Like the politicians, are, like he said earlier, if they were to stick together, it would be make it better. So did Dee said the same thing.
Okay, Dee Boy?
To me, this country is like the Tower of Babel, meaning that everybody is like speaking different languages and it's all chaotic. And if you, like I say, if you can't work it together, then it's going to be chaos and you can't. And so everybody divides and go to their own different sides and create their own different things and people suffer from it. So it's chaotic, divided. We're just a Tower of Babel.
Okay. Did I miss anyone? David, yeah. Did you jump in?
Stalled.
I think he's kind of. Okay. Tim?
I feel like I'm on the dock though. The HMS Titanic wanting to know if I want to get on board or not.
Sink or swim.
Yeah. Okay. Some of you have talked about this already, but what? Tell me again, what do you think's causing our problems?
Bad decisions?
Big government.
Greed.
Big government.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's deal with a couple of these. Sue, greed. Let's start with greed.
Greed, yeah.
What do you mean?
Big government and the fact that the politicians, their wages are assured for life. They don't have to live under the health care thing. They have their own deal. It's, you know, everything is, they're just looking out for themselves.
So when you said greed, you meant of politicians and the government, not of the people?
No, yeah, politicians and the government. That's what I mean, not the people. People don't have anything to be greedy about. It's all gone.
Well, more people work for the government than any other. I mean, the government employs more people than any other industry in the whole country. I mean, the industries together, and the government employs more people. So it's not just the politicians. I mean, it's every government office you can think of.
Okay,
I mean,
so for you, big government is part of the cause of the problems in the country?
Yeah, they need to cut some of the government spending. They need to, you know, think about us, the people. You know, like I said, if they would. Instead of, you know, lining the pockets of the politicians, you know, put people to work here.
Okay.
You know?
I just wanted to understand this better, and then we're going to come back. Rita, you said big government.
Well, the government is so busy. You know, he's right. They're so busy building the government and employing people, but we just saw Greece go down for the same reason. The whole country of Greece went down because 75% of their people work for the government. Well, you can't survive that, you know, and they want to control everything. Well, this country was built on the people and going out and creating jobs and creating industries, and now the government's trying to take it all over again. They're turning socialistic, and socialism does not work. I don't understand why people can't look at history, because history is repeating itself.
Yep. Okay. Michael, what you're saying, yep, to history is repeating itself?
History is repeating itself. I think a lot of our problem is we've gotten away from the Constitution. You know, our forefathers put down a Constitution stating for the people, by the people. The government looks at it as for the government, by the government.
Mm-hmm.
Our constitutional rights have been taken away from us, and I think we need to tell government, here's the Constitution.
So when you say for the government, by the government is taken over, and you say that, I'm curious, what like image or picture do you have in your mind? Who are you talking about when you say that?
Any United States politician, whether he's a congressman, senator, they're only worried about themselves.
Okay. All right, how about some others on this? What do you think are some of the...
I have to agree with Sue down there earlier, about greed. Michael said earlier about how politicians, you know, they said people are losing their homes and whatnot, and they don't care because the way they see it, somebody else with more money will just come in and take that place. So they don't care about people. All they care about is the money. They figure, and it's a shame because the people that are not there, you know, they figure it's just a waste then.
Now, sometimes when I do these conversations and people say greed, what I hear is something different. I just want to test this with you and see what you think. What they say actually is that a lot of us became too greedy and bought homes we couldn't afford.
That's
it's not
true,
the government's
too.
Fault. It's
That's
that true, we too. Did things that we couldn't afford. We were living beyond our – as individuals, not the government now. Mm-hmm. As individuals, we were living beyond our means. Is there any truth to that?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
There is some truth to that.
There is truth to that.
It's very true, but let me back this up.
Yeah.
The government, the Wall Street boys set up the rules that allowed this to happen. Mm-hmm. Now – they took down the savings and loans 25 years ago doing the same thing. They just – it was a test.
Okay.
And they just did it wham, bam, really big this time. Mm-hmm. I'm in the mortgage business, mm-hmm. believe me. I've been in it 30 years. I've watched it. I knew it was coming.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Angie, what do you think? What do you make of this? Is greed or is part of – bless you. Is part of the problem greed on our part as individuals?
We were set up.
Hmm?
I said it was like really like kind of like a setup. They made these a lot of homes affordable, and they put that interest only in there, and you're only paying this little bit amount for so long. And then next thing you know, your mortgage is done doubled, tripled, and the people couldn't afford it. Like when you had to do the little interest only, it was like for 2 or 3 years or something. And then next thing you know, those real payments came out, and then you couldn't afford it because it looked good in the beginning, especially how you paint it all up. And then in the end, it was like, yeah, we couldn't afford
it. Hang on, Rita. Let me get some other folks in here. David, do you want to jump in? I mean, where does greed fit into this among individuals?
I understand with the individual, but I also got to tell you, man, we have gotten so far from, say, the rich and the poor, the middle class. Used to be considered middle class, you know. And
what do you consider now?
Well, I don't know. lower middle class, I guess. The thing I'm saying is we've lost everything. You know, it used to be small business that ran this country. And I don't know when it started, but Walmart and everybody else,
yeah.
We don't make nothing here anymore. You know, we don't do nothing. Everything, I'll tell you, India's booming. You know, China's going nuts.
Well,
they're
nice.
Buying everything over here on the strip, man.
Mm-hmm.
So we're hurting because of we're a sleeping giant, you know, and like we all, or myself, man, when it's good, you're not looking at anything.
Right.
You're not looking at all that stuff going on that factory shut down or what, maybe 1,000 people lost their jobs, but I mean, it just trickled away.
Mm-hmm.
And, everything's gone out of our country. So until we stand up and say, hey, I'm not buying that TV that's made in Indonesia, you know, as a group, we need to just focus on let's bring a little bit back here, go back to where what we know works because mm-hmm. it works real well.
Okay, so I want to come back to this point about government for a second because I want to make sure I understand what you're saying. So I'm going to replay what I think I heard and you tell me if I got it right. All right? So when I asked you about what's causing some of these problems, many of you said big government. And when I said what's going on with that, you said there are too many people on the payroll, our politicians, they get this health care, they get these salaries no matter what happens, that government's just too big, right? Do I have that right so far?
Yes.
Okay, I want to keep going here. Now, what if I said to you, but a lot of the money that we're spending in government is going to people who need benefits, who have lost their jobs, who we're making investments in education. Is that not the case? I mean, is it just that all the money is going to politicians and people who work for government, or is the money also going to us?
The money's not coming to us.
It's going somewhere.
Well, it's real easy to see where the money's going when you got a director that of an organization makes $5 million a year,
Look at a football player.
Look at the school system alone. The superintendent makes an ungodly amount of money.
Right, but if we stacked up all the salaries for government, all the superintendents and the people who head up offices, do you think that that's what's causing the debt and deficit? I'm just curious about when you say. I'm just trying to understand.
They're spending more than they're taking in. Someone who's on unemployment is not paying taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who has recently lost their house due to foreclosure, and that house is sitting in foreclosure 3 months, 6 months, a year, no property taxes are being paid on that house. If you're on unemployment, welfare, government assistance, you're going to look at, okay, my budget is this, and you are going to penny pinch. You're going to cut coupons to go grocery shopping. You're not going to shop at a Vons. You're going to go to a 99-cent store and shop. You're going to cut anything and everything out you can. Our government goes, let's build a bridge to nowhere at $1 billion.
Okay, so you think it's not well-spent money?
It's not well-spent money. Okay,
so let me just make sure I got this straight, because this is an important point. So the problem from how you guys see it is, and I want to get other folks other than Michael in on this one, but is not that we're spending money to make sure people have unemployment insurance. It's that the government's not spending money in the right ways, whether it's bridges or salaries or other kinds of things. Do I have that right? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Marie, am I hearing that right?
Yeah, because let's say, like, I work in a casino, like the CEO, he'll do cuts for everybody, but he's still getting the same amount. He has one employee doing what 4 or 5 employees are doing. Example, like my husband, he's a food server, and now they made him part-time so he won't have any insurance. He'll have to pay for insurance. You know how much the insurance is for me, the kids, and everything? If he wants to have insurance, about $600 a month. He doesn't even make that a month.
Mm-hmm. So you can't afford it.
So he can't afford it. So now he doesn't have insurance.
So what are you going to do about that?
He's not going to have insurance at all.
So,
because he can't afford it.
Do you, there's this phrase I want to ask you about to see what you think about it. Do you think that there's something called the common good?
I believe in the greater good.
The greater good?
Common good.
Meaning what?
It's like what's best for everybody is what should be. You know, there's like so many different people that are, you know, they're taking part-time jobs when they, you know, should be earning, you know, full-time, staying, you know, with everything pretty much. And, you know, it, again, like with what you were saying with the CEO thing.
Yeah, they cut back a little bit, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, if they take a risk, you know, to lower people's, you know, salaries and stuff, they should be lowering their own as well.
And that would be part of the greater good in your mind?
Yes.
Okay. Joe, what do you think? Is there something called the common good?
Yeah, well, I think it would be common good. I think that, like I said, I mentioned earlier, we as Americans, we've come back from worse than we're in now. I mean, if you think about it, like during the Depression, we're in worse circumstances during it than during the Depression. But we have more assets. There's a lot more people.
Right. And so, how would you define when you hear the phrase "common good"? What comes to mind?
I would say that I'm not 100% sure common good is. I'm thinking that most Americans are good. Most Americans are honest, hardworking, and I think that we should keep our chins up.
Okay. Sue, what do you think? When I said the phrase common good, do you think there's something called the common good?
I see it in the churches. I see them trying to help people and help each other and support each other, you know, help the homeless, you know, have all kinds of food pantries to give out free food, you know, all kinds of things where they're trying to help.
And so for you in that sense, the common good means what?
The church.
Okay. Angie, what do you think when I say the phrase common good? Is there something called the common good?
I don't think if we're talking politics and government.
Just sit up a little.
If we're talking politics and government, I don't think there's something called the common good. From a humanistic level, maybe people think that they have the common good within them to help thy neighbor and such. But as a whole, government speaking, I think it's a nice concept, but I don't think it exists.
So you think it can exist between and among people, almost like Sue was talking about, but not necessarily through government?
Correct.
Rita, what do you think? You're shaking your head.
Well, I agree with her. I think that overall, most of the people really do try to help each other. I mean, there's a lot of people out there just looking for the handout, but there's a lot of people out there trying to help each other. Is our government trying to do it? If it'll get them a vote.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, they like to, oh, it's the common good, you know, take from the rich, give to the poor. There it gets down to, you know, I mean, there are a lot of us working part-time jobs, anything we can do just to keep ourselves going. And then, you know, there's a lot of them out there that just go, right. Oh, well, the government owes us.
So you think in terms of the common good, what then? What's your bottom line?
It depends on where you're putting the term to. In the government? No, I don't think there's such a thing as the common good.
But with people?
With people on a one-to-one basis, yes, I think there is a common good.
Mm-hmm. Michael, what do you think?
With people, yes, there is a common good. Neighbors are out there helping each other. You live in your neighborhood and you're working on your car. One of your neighbors is a mechanic. He comes down and gives you a hand. You're in a grocery store line and someone's 50 cents short. You reach in your pocket and give the cashier that 50 cents. The people, there is a common good. We want, as Americans and people, we want to see each other succeed and help each other. Common good in the government, no.
Okay, Manny, you're shaking your head when Michael was speaking. Why?
Well, I mostly agree with what he's saying, but at the same time, I've actually seen the opposite. I've experienced the opposite, mm-hmm. where when I try to help people, they turn on me. You know, they start calling me names. They start making fun of me. I've been called all sorts of names and, you know, been called including liar, cheat, fraud, mm-hmm. scam, ripoff, everything else, you know, and here I am trying to help somebody. So, you know, I mean, I've seen it the exact opposite, though. You know, my idea of the common good would be to re-legalize hemp.
Oh, there you go.
Because I really feel that the initial depression back in the stock market crash back in 1929 was seriously brought on by the prohibition of alcohol.
Right. So do you think, though, that it's – I guess one of the questions I have for you guys is, do you think it's possible to create the common good, that people can come together around a notion of the greater good of the common good? Is that still possible in this day and age?
Yeah, it's possible. David? If it's possible, will it happen? I don't know.
What makes you say it's possible?
The common good is the people, is everyday average Joe, you know, out there working, and that's who built this nation. And there's a few that have benefited and reaped the rewards of that, and so everybody in this room would be the common good, you know. The politicians, or if they're looking at doing something for the common good of the people, you know.
So, what would prevent us from reaching some kind of an agreement on the common good on some topic or issue?
I think it would probably be the opposite because, you know, not all people are, you know, sweet. Not all people will, like, you know, give you your extra 50 cents if you're short or things like that, you know. Me personally, I don't drive. I take the bus everywhere. And the nearest bus stop to me is about an hour walk away. Every now and then, not all the time, occasionally a car will drive by and see me in the heat and offer me a ride to the nearest stop. And, you know, occasionally, you know, in the 100-degree weather, I will take the ride just to get to the bus stop. But then, you know, of course, there are those uncommon people who think, you know, other things, you know, like, oh she's out on the side of the road, you know, what's going on?
Oh, no, she's going to kill me.
What today?
Like, or things like that. Or, you know, the dangerous people who, you know, want something else other than giving me, you know.
But aside from someone offering you that particular ride, is there, you know, that could be familiar. Is there... A lot of you said when I asked you how things are going in the country, you said we're divided, you know, we're arguing past each other. It's confusing. What's preventing us from coming to some agreement around the common around what would be the common good today?
I don't think it's us as the people that are so divided. I mean, I think as I talk to people, we're all concerned about what's going on in government. Government's very divided.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really think it's us as the people. And you're right. A lot of people would be a lot nicer, except that it's a scary world out there.
Yeah,
I mean,
trust anybody.
You know.
Because desperate times.
What's really made it scary is the lack of income.
Right.
People now have to turn basically to dishonest measures in order to make a living.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And this is, you know, this is where we are. You know, let's go back to, you know, the 1960s. Everybody was working.
Mm-hmm.
People were honest. People were good to each other. You know,
Have we lost the goodness, or it's just that we're under stress?
We're under stress.
Demographic, maybe.
Dee, what do you think? Have we lost the goodness, or are we just under stress?
We're in a world, it's the world of perilous times. It's under stress, period. It's like now you're not going to get, I'm not going to help you with 50 cents because I'm going to need about 50 more cents to help pay for my own stuff. Everybody is winning, a lot of people have, I'm not going to say everybody, but a lot of people have went into survival mode. It's I got to get what I have to get and I'm going to go through any ways to do it. I mean, people rob churches now and some certain stuff people that didn't do, like some stuff you wouldn't touch. Okay, I'll rob a bank, I'll do this, I'll do that. But people are going to the extremes now. And the only reason why it is because, and it's all trickled down. Like, no job, no money. I got children at home. I have a lot of things. The prisons are getting crowded and everything else because people are doing whatever they can. So we can't have a common good and come all together because we're scared about what the next man's going to do. Or is it a scam? Are they, you know, all of that.
Yeah, I'm thinking that the, the prisons have been overcrowded for a long time. I mean,
and they're only getting worse.
It's getting worse, yeah, but still, I mean, I think that, again, you know, I have to keep coming back to optimism.
Mm-hmm.
It's, it's everyone seems like anti-government here. You know, it's we're in a bad place, you know, so I think, again, I think if we be optimistic and we put our heads together, we'll America's going to be number one again. So our credit rating dropped one level. You know, it's to me, it seems ridiculous to be so, what's the word I'm looking for? Anti-government or, you know, anti-establishment or whatever you want to say. I think that
anarchism.
I don't think anarchism, but I think, you know, I think that we should I know a lot of people are hurting, and I'm blessed in my life, and I've had the same job for almost 20 years, and I have other work that I do. I just taught a job here at this college, so it's like. I have a lot of optimism. So.
All right, so I'm going to shift gears on you a little. What leaders do you trust?
Define God. Leader.
What?
God.
God? Okay, God's one. How about some others? I don't say that jokingly. So
not
God,
jokingly,
right?
But no, seriously. Yeah. Not
what leaders do you trust?
Ron Paul?
I'll agree with that one.
Okay.
No,
Angie? Any leaders?
Man. Trust no man. Dennis Kucinich.
Leaders in our government?
Leaders, just leaders.
Period. Like pastors and things like that.
Is that pastors?
I'm just saying, like some, not all now.
Mm-hmm. Well, David, who do any leaders trust?
I'm not comfortable with that right now, no.
No?
No, I don't.
Ken?
I think leaders, it could be a vague term, actually. I mean, depending on, you know, people are yelling out like president or you know, pastor and whatnot. I mean, an individual person could be a leader, and we could trust that person. I mean, that might even be more trustworthy than a politician.
Can you think of one that you would trust like that?
Offhand? No, not really.
Only my
I mean, at this point of age, I mean, you really could just trust yourself and your instincts.
Right.
I mean, just like anyone said, it's desperate times, and a lot of people are doing a lot of, you know, things that they shouldn't be doing just to make it. I mean, I was listening to what some of these people said. I had someone, you know, I work retail. I mean, I'm just trying to make it myself, going through school and whatnot. I have people, grown people, you know, go out in the shopping carts. People, you know, will throw their receipts in shopping carts, take the receipt out from the shopping cart, and it'll say they paid with cash, walk in my store, grab the item off the shelf, bring it to the register, and say they want to return the item. off somebody else's receipt. And that's something, I mean, that's just theft right there. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's sad to see, that's what it's come down to. Mm-hmm. I mean, and these aren't, expensive items either. I mean, these could be like $5, $6 items, just enough for them, to steal this item off the shelf so they can get food somewhere next door.
Like it seems like the more expensive items or whatever have like a cereal.
So I just want to stick with this leader question for a minute, though. So are there any leaders you trust?
You.
Me. Sue?
God first and my husband second.
Okay. Okay.
I trust my leaders at my job. I mean, I have a boss who she would jump in front of a car for me. I feel
okay. So your boss. So your boss. So we've said God, some pastors, a boss.
It's my mother.
Your
mother. I have to trust my mommy.
Anyone else?
She will never do that.
I would trust my mother.
No. Tim.
I don't see any leaders.
No leaders.
So we got a bunch of world of followers right now. We don't have any leaders.
I'm sorry, say that again.
So we have a world of followers right now. We don't have any leaders.
So we're in a room. There's 13 of you. The leaders we've mentioned, I just want to go back through this again, right? God, some pastors, a boss, your mother. Someone said their mother. A couple of people said their moms. I would throw my mom in there too. Mm-hmm. Our moms. No one else?
Ron Paul.
Ron Paul. Okay.
I'm
sorry, Ron Paul.
I've got friends that I would trust, and I know that they would do whatever they could for me, and they know that I do whatever I could for them.
I mean,
because we have that. But I've had some friends that, needed something, and I gave it to them, and they go, oh, don't worry, and so.
And what?
Well, I mean, I lent somebody some money with a promise that I'd have it back because I really didn't have it to lend, and that's been a year ago, and every excuse in the world. But that was, I just look at it as, at least I did what,
So all the leaders that we've mentioned are people or spiritual things that are close to us, right? That we can touch or feel or experience in some direct way.
I'm going to pass on the spiritual.
Okay, that's fine.
Thing.
One of the things, my point is that there isn't very much beyond that. Ron Paul, a couple of you mentioned, but there's no groundswell for any particular leader in the community, in the country, your state. I'm not hearing anything.
Mm-mm. Definitely not Harry Reid.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Leave the senator alone for a minute. So I want to flip it then because if there were a leader, if I came to you and said, I want to earn your trust as a leader, what would I need to do to earn your trust?
Tell me what your stance on hemp is.
Okay.
Well, do what you say you're going to do consistently.
So
whatever it would be, if you made a promise that you would do that. Not just say something that sounds good and then do whatever you please. I'd
probably work your way up, I guess, say if it's somebody who's just like off the street or whatever, they're like, I'm going to do this for you, so start with the little stuff and then, that'll build up like a trust almost. And then
Ken?
I have to agree with her. Trust is nowadays something that it's not easy to, attain. You have to work your way from the small way up. I mean, there's been a lot of trust in our country and a lot of depression and a lot of, downfall, basically. And when you make your, when you promise something, you want to come through with that. And a lot of our leaders or so-called leaders have made a lot of promises and they haven't come through with us, which has made our country, doubt people, doubt anyone.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Maria, how about you? If I wanted to earn your trust as a leader, what would I need to do these days?
The same thing, improve yourself from the bottom and then go work your way up.
Work my way up?
Mm-hmm. Because like he was saying, right now you can't trust anybody because everybody promises you certain things and they don't succeed.
Maybe like...
Hang on. Tim, you're going to jump in?
Well, yes. Even though you cannot get to that goal, put forth the effort and show me you're going to try and put in real effort and prove to me every step of the way you're going to be worth me following.
So let's stick with this point for a minute. So a lot of you have said make promises and follow through. Mm-hmm. Now, what if, to Tim's point, what if I've made promises but it hasn't worked out? Are you going to throw me out of office? Are you going to no longer trust me?
Nothing changes overnight. That's why he said if you're making an effort and an attempt, I mean, you can't – some things you can't do. Some things are not the – are impossible. But don't go into something knowing that it's impossible and just promising us because it sounds good.
We're changing.
Yeah. Or, yeah. Because it's, change is hard. It's hard to overcome change. Even this country and the situation that it's in, it's not going to happen overnight. Anybody can promise us the world, but nothing's going to happen overnight. It's going to take – just like it took time to raggedy it up, it's going to take time to fix it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, one thing in life, though, that is constant is change.
Right.
Meaning what?
Everything changes. I mean, as –
So, but what about this thing that Dee's mentioning about the promises I make? And
well, if you make a promise and then, you know, we're, let's say we're working together and we're either you're or employees or you're the you know, chieftain of our tribe or whatever you want to say, and you can't get us food or something like that, maybe again we got to put our minds together and work together to fulfill what you've told us. What you've
but
told
if I were
us.
A leader and I were sitting at this table with you and I'd say, you know, those Las Vegans, you know – that sounds nice, you know, don't overpromise and, you know, change is hard and I should, you know, just make an effort and stuff. But, you know, but if I did that, they'd throw me out because everyone wants change right away and they want it for free. Isn't that right?
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, that's impossible.
What? It doesn't work that way, though. You can't do it.
You got to give to get.
Well, you said, well, does that mean you're going to throw me out like, you're entitled to something. Let me say, my first job, I was 17 years old. I was driving the car for a transmission shop, and I did a couple of mistakes at the shop, and then I ended up sideswiping the car. They fired me, okay? Not everybody can do everything. So if you're not, you may show an attempt, it doesn't matter, but if you can't do your job, then you need to get out so somebody else can do the job. Just like any other field, we're all, you know.
So how do you look at it if we're divided and it's a confusing situation and I'm a leader and I'm trying to create, you know, I've said I'm going to try to do X, Y, and Z and I can't get X, Y, and Z done because no one will cooperate with me?
Get somebody that will cooperate.
So for me, it would be if you made that promise to me, it would be more about seeing how you went about fulfilling that promise. So to me, it's about communication, not just saying in the beginning when you want the vote, I'm going to do this, and then I never hear from you again and don't see you, and then it doesn't get done. It would be about making the promise and then seeing the steps, even if they didn't work out, but that you did take the steps. That would give me confidence in you.
Michael, would that give you confidence in me?
Yes.
It depends.
Like we said, you know, Dave was saying we all have our jobs that we do in life. Not everyone can do each other's jobs. You know, I wouldn't want to walk into a classroom with Dee and teach kids, you know. My line of work, I'm taught to run into a burning building where everyone else is taught to run out. You know, most people don't want to do my job. I deal with blood every day. But we have to put forth an effort. You have to show that if I'm running as a politician and I promise I'm going to cut taxes for everybody, when I get to Washington, I turn around and make all these little side deals and everything, and next thing I know, I'm raising taxes, I'm going to lose the trust of everybody. If you can't do it because, oh, well, you know, you guys elected me, I tried, come out and tell me why you can't do it. Is it because this other group over here is fighting you all the way? They're 100% against you. Is it you were put into a position where I don't know what I'm doing or how to get to that point?
So let me just pick up on one of your points, because before when we were talking about the common good, we were talking about the greater – Kristen used the phrase the greater good at one point.
Yes.
Right? And oftentimes, sir, to reach the common good, we might have to compromise with others, right?
Yes.
So is compromise in terms of the kinds of keeping promises we're talking about now, is it going to require – I guess I'm curious, is it going to require – I don't have anything particular in mind. I'm just curious about it. Will it require compromise in order for us to be able to move forward, or is it just that everyone sort of has to stick to their guns and fight it out?
I think compromise.
We all have to start thinking about what is good for
you want to call it the common good, what's good for everybody? I mean, I got in a conversation one night with a very good friend of mine, and her grandson is starting college, and she was all on schools, and I go, now, wait a minute. Let's look at. So she went home and researched, and she came back, and she goes, you know, you're right. I was thinking only because my grandson is going to college about what was good for him. And when I really thought about it, what, you know, what's good for everybody. And I think that's what we all have to go to. Quit thinking about what's just going to make our life better. What's going to make everybody else's life, you know, what's going to be good for the country, really everybody around.
Dee, what do you think? Is that... I'm curious when compromise is a positive thing and when it's a weakness or when you think someone's broken a promise.
I think compromise, like it's a saying that says you got to give a little to get a little. So you do have to sometimes come to common grounds. Compromise is not okay when you start to compromise yourself and compromise your beliefs or whatever to get something. Like when you have to give too much to get, then it's not worth it when you start compromising yourself.
Well, it seems to me like based on what I said about the greater good and then what everybody's saying about the common good, there's always the factor of somebody messing it up. You know what I mean? And to me, it's those people that are bringing us down, you know, things like that. You know, you got me personally, I'm on welfare right now. You know, I earn, you know, money, but I do like participation for it. You know, I got food stamps. I'm sure, you know, numbers of people do, but there are some out there who do nothing for it. And that's what's bringing us down.
Right. But when you think about leaders compromising and keeping promises, when is a compromise still keeping a promise, or when do you see it as someone just sort of gave in, they caved, they were, I mean, how do you,
when you compromise, and there's also something coming back, if you know what I mean? Because if you're just compromising everything, and nothing's coming back for, you know, to benefit that situation, you know, I mean.
I got something for that.
Hang on. Let me just pull him in. Go ahead.
Oh, that's all take and no give. Basically, is where he's going, mm-hmm. And that's a lot of that is where we are today. It's all take.
Right.
And, you know, it's all about basically a lot of the attitude, it's all about me, take. And even Jimmy Carter talked about that clear back in the late 70s. He said we need to get away from that realm.
Right.
And
so if I were a leader and I was sitting here with you and I said, you know, I hear you that you want me to act on my principles, right? That's one of the things I take away. I hear you that you want me to follow through on the promises that I made. I hear, Angie, that I need to communicate. This is about effort. I need to demonstrate my effort. I hear that. But I'm afraid that if I compromise with others to reach the common good, you're going to think that somehow I broke my promise to you. And I'm afraid to do that because I want to be effective. What would you say to me?
Well, I think compromise is different than giving in. So when you go and when you compromise, you're still going to come away with something, a portion of what was promised. So that would be sufficient for me. If you just said, my hands are tied, I can't do anything, that's a different story.
Okay, so that's what Dave was just saying a minute ago. Okay. Tim, you agreeing?
Oh, yeah. As long as you're moving forward, you're moving toward that goal. You know, granted, everybody's going to have to give up something. That's a given. It's in life. We do the same thing. We give up time for money and a job. We give up all of our sanity to have kids. We give. It's give and take. But what it, you know, as long as you're moving toward that goal, that one goal, or the multiple goals that a leader has to strive for, mm-hmm. And like she said, when you give up, or when you say I can't do it because this person's blocking me, that's really not an answer. That's a surrender.
Okay.
You know, you got to. If everybody feels this is for the, you know, the greater good, what you're doing, you stick to your guns. You give a little bit, but you take a little bit, and everybody will compromise on any subject. You just have to find out where the pivoting point is. And it takes a lot of level-headed thinking and talking.
Well, what if, like, for example, what if Timothy said, Tim said to me, "Hey, Joe, you know, cut off your right hand. It's for the greater good. It's a compromise. Well, it's my right hand. You know, I have to cut off my right hand so for the greater good. For the, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
But what if I say I'll cut off my left foot? That's a compromise.
Oh, I guess, and if you think about it that way, but like who wants to cut off their foot or their hand?
It's always for the common good. You know? When you compromise, each person has, we'll give up something.
Like 50-50.
Maria, what?
In like 50-50. It has to, like you say, compromise to me means 50-50.
In a perfect environment, yeah.
Yeah.
So at the risk of this question, but I have to ask it because I'm curious what you think. So I know this is a risky question, but if the President of the United States and the Speaker of the House and the Majority Leader of the Senate and the leaders who are trying to work through this debt and deficit thing, if they were all sitting with us now after we've had this part of the last hour conversation and we've just talked about the right hand and the left foot, what would you say to them? What instructions? If we were like a jury, but we were going to give instructions to our leaders about how to, not like what to cut, I'm not curious, I'm not interested in that, but just how they should approach this, what would you say to them?
Be honest.
Be honest. Sue, what would you say?
Pretty much the same thing, be honest, because I feel like we've just been really.
I mean, how would you get them to? What instructions would you give them about reaching an agreement around this? Just fight it out?
Get off your high horse. First of all,
fighting it out.
You're not standing on the mountain preaching. Mm-hmm. All right, you guys are American citizens. Each one of you, sit down, have a civil conversation. Both sides has points that they want addressed. You can talk about them. Talk is cheap, man. Don't cost you nothing.
Okay, D.
I just think, like, what I would tell them, and I would have no problem, you can fly me there now, because it's just point blank and simple. Everybody's talking about that. If they seriously care about the country and have the country at heart and what's best for the people, so they say, then they need to sit down like adults and quit going over this airway and that airway. And just, like they said, sit together and work it out. We're not united. We look weak right now. Like, we have all this argument, like, I mean, it's ridiculous. So, somebody want to save face, I don't know what they want to do, but they need to just come together and let's be what we say. We are united, so let's be united. It's give a little, take a little, like you say.
Quit their scare tactics.
Oh, yeah.
What do you mean?
They'll go, okay, if we're going to cut the budget, then we're going to have to cut Social Security, or we're going to have to cut this and cut that. And they take the weakest, you know, the weakest people, or the people that need it the most. Oh, we're going to have to cut them. Excuse me?
Right.
That's not where, you know, what about, there's a lot of,
yeah. Take a 10% pay cut yourself.
Show us that you know, you always tell us, you know, we need you to, you know, tighten your belts. Well, hello,
eat your peas.
Madam Pelosi, give up your plane.
Yeah, Michael?
That's a lot of it is, if we don't pass the deficit, the budget deficit, the country's going to shut down and everything. So what if the government shuts down for 3, 4, 5 days?
It might be good things.
How much is it going to save us?
Let's take a couple million from each athlete.
Yeah.
we can make a lot of money.
So it's scare tactics. Oh, if we don't do this is going to happen to the...
go to waste.
Yeah.
All right, next question I want to ask you. So I asked you about what leaders you trust. I'm curious, what organizations do you trust?
AAA.
AAA?
AAA.
I wouldn't even trust them.
Salvation Army.
What organization? Well, I'm sorry.
Salvation Army.
Salvation Army?
Their CEO gets something like $13,000 a year.
Okay.
As opposed to the other likewise, you know, similar organizations who get... You know,
United Way or even a Red
Cross. 300,000,
Opportunity Village is a really good.
Opportunity Village?
Yeah.
And I don't think it's organized, but Agassi, Andre Agassi, just him himself, it like as far as his like the school, like I know in our neighborhood he's put a rec center, a school, yeah. It's free, the education is wonderful. He's wonderful, like he's done a lot just as far as putting back into this community.
So we've got Opportunity Village, Salvation Army, Agassiz, any other organization?
Volunteers of America.
And tell me about why do you trust them?
Organization and they give back to the society.
Okay. All right. So Volunteers of America. Any others?
Battered Women and Children organization.
Mm-hmm. What is that, WIC or something?
No. It's for like abused women with children.
Like SafeNess?
Yeah, pretty much like SafeNess.
Okay. So we've got a handful of organizations. Salvation Army is the only one that a number of us sort of said, but there are other ones that for individuals. So have those organizations in your mind, the ones that you like, Volunteers of America. What is it about those organizations you trust?
They're financially responsible.
They're financially responsible.
As Susan said, they aren't out. They don't have their top people worrying about how much money they're going to make, and it's a trickle down. They take the biggest portion of what's given to them and give it back into the community.
Okay, so that's what Andrew was saying in terms of giving back, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of them is pretty much like they're all volunteers, so it's the community giving to the community. So it's not like anybody higher up or anything. You know, there was maybe like one or two organizers, but, you know, it was still just a regular person trying to help everybody.
It's not a lot of paid professionals.
Exactly. So there isn't, you
know.
And
why does that matter to you?
Because it's a regular person, you know, like say me or you or anybody else, you know, just like saying, okay, I'm going to do something for these people. So, you know, they got, you know, their gang people together or whatever, you know, just to, you know, help everybody out.
Yeah, a lot of times these people are in this, were in or are in the same boat that you're in right there.
Before you jump in, Joe, I'll come back to you. But Tim, just say another word about that. What do you mean?
They've either gone through the same situation you have where you lost your job, you're down and out, you need help with drugs or alcohol or something to that effect, and they've been there. They know what's going down, and they know how they got out of that situation, and they can help you find a way. If their way doesn't work, they know somebody has a different way.
Exactly.
You know? And what is that? Do they know something I wouldn't know, or what?
Experience. They've gone through it.
Experience. So that it matters.
And then they're making the extra step to make it easier for the other one.
Okay. Exactly. Sorry, Joe. Let's come back to you now.
Well, I'm going to say even the Salvation Army has a CEO.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he gets $13,000 a year.
And he started from dirt just like everybody else.
Well, I have a hard time believing that the CEO of Salvation Army only makes
$13,000. Okay, but is there an organization? I'm curious, is there an organization you do trust?
My church.
Your church. And why?
It was God, basically.
But the Salvation Army is a church.
Okay, I'm more curious about why you trust certain groups. I mean, why? Well, so your local church.
My local church. I mean, I go to a huge church. It's a central. Mm-hmm. It's giant.
How many people go?
Jeez,
thousands.
Yeah. Thousands. I mean, you have to have parking. They have parking, but we do a lot of stuff.
So, what enables you to trust that church, which is a really big church? It's not a small church where there's like 150 people in the pews on Sunday or Wednesday or whatever day people are there.
Well, I don't think I would just trust that church. I think I would trust the Christian church, most churches in per se.
Okay. All right. So for those, come back to these groups that you have in your mind about why you trust them. What other reasons do you trust these groups?
I trust any organization that's actually willing to help other people. Any organization that's willing to take their time and patience to make one person happy or to meet their needs and whatnot has earned my trust, because you don't have a lot of that anymore. You don't have someone that's willing to go the extra step, you know, to make that person more financially stable or make them not hunger or to make him or her less pain. You know, they want to make a difference.
So when you see all these other groups out there that are doing work in the community or nationwide or even globally, do you see most of them not as not sort of fitting that description?
Because
there are a lot of groups out there.
Yeah, right? I'm talking about any organization, no matter how big or small. I mean, it could be a local group in Vegas or it could be a worldwide group. It's just a matter of, you know, are there, you know, do they want to help the right people out? Do they want, you know, are they there for the right reasons?
Mm-hmm. I don't know that I've ever thought about having to trust an organization in general. I think a lot of the organizations that people have spoke of, their mission is to help the community, but they're still a business. I think the Central Christian Church is making a lot of money, even though they might preach to you on Sunday great things and you feel good. It's a business. I think, you know, I like the SPCA. I like what they do, but I still think that they make money. So does that mean I trust them? It doesn't mean that I trust them or distrust them.
Okay, so what gives you confidence in an organization that they're doing, that they're effective?
Those organizations that are making money, such as the church or ASPCA, that money they're making is going towards a greater good.
Okay, so it's going back into the community.
It's going back into the community, towards the safety of animals.
The majority of it's going back into the community. And, you know, I mean, it's not hard to, really, with the computer age anymore, get on and check that sort of thing. But if it is going back into the community, because there's a lot of people that do it for, I mean, you know, they volunteer, and those people are really good. And I'm not saying that it's not those people. It gets back again to power, and the old adage, power corrupts. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, in a lot of them, you know, they do. Do I give more to the Salvation Army than I do to a lot of the rest of them? Yes, I do.
Because
I know that they give it back to the community. Their people in power take very, very little. They live in poverty practically themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Me personally, if I'm investing in my church, Salvation Army, Red Cross, whoever it is, I honestly can't personally say. I can see some people that benefit. I see the little poster children and all that stuff. But honestly, I can't say where their money's going. It looks like it. I mean, 100% I can't say. But as long as I know where I'm giving it from, it's cool with me. But that's what I look at, too, though. Like everybody else, it seems like we all look at people that's helping people. Those are the people that we are, the organizations that we consider, I don't want to say, like she said, trust, but that we have some type of